Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Loose Units, Loose Ends, our weekly spin-off podcast where I, Paul Verhoeven, sit down with Dad, my dad, not Dad, he's not our dad. God, the wheels are falling off this one. Dad, I actually was reading a paper this morning for another piece that I'm doing, and I thought some of it might interest you as pertains to your Zen, to your minimalism. Dad, the findings I found are a little bit interesting. So I was looking into why people collect things, right? Because your job as an antique dealer, often, you know, you make money in certain cases because you are buying things that people collected at some point that they don't want anymore, or you are selling people things that they want for their collections. And I was curious as to why people collect things, because I was also curious as to why you don't, why you and Mum avoid collecting things. You do the opposite. So there's a few different theories that psychoanalysts and behavioral psychologists and whatnot.
This isn't
a criticism of you.
I'm loving it.
It's interesting. So psychoanalysts have suggested a few different theories. One, that unloved children learn to seek comfort by accumulating belongings. So I guess the psychology there is the more things they have, the less they need other people's validation, because the things are proof of how much they as a person are worth. I thought that was an interesting...
It is fascinating, particularly pertaining to you.
What do you mean?
Because you were incredibly loved and still are.
And yet I collect things.
And yet if you basically have one room and it's a homage to Lego.
Well, it's got some Lego in it. By the way, Dad, I packed away most of my Lego on the weekend. It's in tubs now. So
interesting.
Well, I mean, look, you are right. I am loved. I have several collections. I'm not a hoarder, but I do have lots of lovely things. But the next few explanations, I think will interest you. The second one is collecting is motivated potentially by existential anxiety. So even though, Dad, we will die, the things that we own, the collections of things that we curated and assembled will live on. Now, when you look at museums, when you look at a culture that is long since passed, and you look at the relics of theirs that are assembled in a museum, it is entirely possible that they have attained some level of immortality, because even though the British fucking stole everything, when you go look at the Elgin marbles at the British Museum, you do see a part of a long dead people, and you do get to... They do, in a way, live on. And maybe it's that fear of death that compels some people to curate collections of things to say, I was here. This was me. And that becomes slightly alarming with you, Dad, because whilst you don't have anything because you sell it compulsively, the books about you that I wrote and the podcast and now people's understanding of what you lived through and your stories and our personalities and our relationship, technically speaking, we're going to live forever, baby. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's correct in terms of living forever and whilst... the world exists as we know it.
Yeah.
But I think collections, museums, they've got an amazing display, a collection from Tutankhamun. Mm. And funnily enough, it's just up the road at the Sydney Museum. And I think history is really important.
Yeah.
So important. And because I deal in antiques... Mm. What I do is I bring treasures home, and I swear to myself and Christine, these are not negotiable. They're going to stay in our collection at home. You know, Paul, that we, whilst I'm a minimalist, minimalists can have, it doesn't mean you don't have anything. I knew a minimalist once who lived in an apartment in Sydney's CBD. He was at the pointy end of minimalism. Before minimalism was a thing, before it was in the media, before there were books written about it.
You sure he didn't just have really shitty taste? Because I know a couple of
people
who
have... He had exquisite taste.
I know a couple of people who are phenomenally rich who live in basically unadorned apartments, and it's not because they adhere to the tenets of minimalism, it's because they just have very bad taste and they don't have taste. They just exist in a space and don't really have strong opinions about art, music, film, you know, anything like that. So they just see a living space as a place to sleep, but they actually just are almost a blank slate personality-wise. And I find that a real shame. And on the other end of the spectrum, you've got people who hoard things, and that's a joyless compulsion. That is not the curation of things. That
I
is
agree.
The that is a real psychological problem. But Dad, I also read about something, you know, about peacocking. You know, about trying to attract a mate. It's a very... every living species tries to do this. Mm. One theory for collecting, it's called the endowment effect. And the idea is that... one idea for collecting is it's basically that you are trying to attract, without meaning to, attract potential mates by signaling how good you are at gathering things, right? And how resourceful you are. What do you think of that theory?
Okay. Mm. You know, Paul, that I'm looking around our place here, and there are some exceptional items. And I don't say that lightly. A few weeks ago, I had some Chinese silver that has gone to one of the biggest auction houses in the world, and it's one of the best collections to come onto the market ever. Okay? That's ever in the world. That's how good it is. That those items adorn this place for several weeks. Christine and I acknowledge the beauty, the rarity, the significance. If I have friends over, which you know is rare, because basically we don't have anyone over here, but I find it frustrating to have to explain individual items to people that come over, be it friends or family.
Why?
Because when people come in the front door and they look around, and I'm actually really hoping that they will be able to fully appreciate the significance of the items they're looking at.
Yeah, but I've walked into the apartment and you've bounced up and taken me and Tegan around to each thing and just said what it is, how much it's worth and where it's from, and then looked at us for a reaction. You clearly want people to know exactly. Are you hoping people intuit? Like,
yes.
What are you talking about? Like, you love doing this.
I love doing it, but...
But you don't like doing it.
Paul.
Fucking mess of contradictions, John Dehoven.
Paul, listen to me.
Yes.
What I would like to say...
You don't even know. You don't know. Know thyself, Dad.
No,
you don't know...
I do, but I sometimes feel as though people don't fully appreciate the significance of the items, and that's a fair comment. And it's,
so when
and
you,
it's true, really.
Also, when you give someone something, when you give them a gift or whatever, you tell them how hard it was to get, how much it costs, where it was from, because I know the impulse there because I have the same impulse. I need them to... Some people, when you give them a thing or show them a thing, they don't react.
True.
And it drives me crazy. If you walk someone up to a thing that is objectively incredible with an amazing backstory... Mm. And they ignore that backstory or don't take it in, it drives me crazy. And it's bred in me, Dad, a compulsion to over-explain and over-hype things.
Interesting.
Yeah,
it's interesting listening to you, Paul. I feel at this juncture I'm actually talking to myself.
It's pretty fucking relatable. It's relatable, isn't it? So when I walk into an art gallery and I see people looking at the artwork but ignoring the plaque, I want to scream because I go, the context... is so important. When you read the story behind a thing and then look at it, or do that in reverse order. Look at the thing, and then, right?
This is a very interesting topic, something you and I have never discussed, and that's the thing about labels and art.
Yes.
And I actually take a contrarian view to you.
Right.
An opposite view. I have always been fastidious in reading the labels before I look at the art.
Uh-huh.
I've done an about face now. And I feel it's important to not be distracted
mm.
by the object, by knowing about it. So now what I do
yeah.
is that I move along, and I love galleries. I
yeah.
make every city in the world I've ever been into, I make a beeline for the galleries. I have spent 8 hours at the Louvre by myself.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
The brain is not... It's not possible for the human brain to absorb that much information. You go crazy in these big institutions. But what I like to do now is stand back and let the art speak for itself.
Yeah, but once you've done that, surely then the context after that is totally fine. I like the idea, by the way. I will walk into a room, have an honest emotional reaction to a thing, look it over, then I will read the plaque. Depending on where they put it, sometimes an artist will put the explanation before the artwork, right?
Mm.
But watching people experience art in different ways is very interesting. And as pertains to this podcast, sometimes you will tell... No, you know what? Not sometimes. Regularly, you will tell myself and the listeners a story. And before the story, you will tell us that this is an amazing story. It's full of pathos. It tells you... And you literally do the plaque thing. So you preload these stories, and I like that you do this because you are telling us up front how much it means to you, how significant it is, and you're basically looking people in the eye and going, fucking pay attention because this is going to be XYZ. So with this show, you frame crime stories most of the time, if you're into them, in a way that is an invert of how you approach art in galleries, where you get to the context later. Does that make sense?
It does, but what I find happens, and yep. I think it's a normal human reaction, that if you see a piece of art prior to looking at it, insofar as you find out who did it,
uh-huh.
and you find out that it's by, for example, let's say... Trying to think of that American artist who did the Campbell's soup can.
Andy Warhol. But how about the Mona Lisa? Knowing the Mona Lisa is the Mona Lisa and knowing about the hype. If you walked into a gallery and had... Like, imagine you had amnesia and didn't know anything about the Mona Lisa's name, history, Leonardo da Vinci, any of that stuff. The cultural whatever. And you were wandering through a gallery and you saw that painting, and it wasn't in a room behind perspex and bulletproof glass with cameras aimed at it. It was just in a room. I sincerely doubt you would have the reaction you have. But because you have been top-loaded with all that context, it makes you look at it differently. Now, whether that puts an unfair weight of expectation on it is a valid discussion to have. But I like that you preload stories and tell us how much they mean to you and how... You know, and when they're set, and probably, you're a hype man, right? I mean, I think that's an important thing.
Okay, but what I was trying to say was that knowing that it's by a famous artist,
yeah,
will have a dramatic effect on your perception.
Yes,
and take the Mona Lisa as mm-hmm. a point. I saw the Mona Lisa in that room.
Yeah,
there were between 500 and 1,000 people
packed.
All of them. Taking selfies, not one person was looking at the picture.
Well, I know
they had their backs to the picture.
I mean, you can't say not one because some would have been, but I understand. I do.
I was in awe of that, and that took for me.
Yeah,
that was far more spectacular than the painting itself, which is a small painting.
Mm-hmm.
And I specifically and on purpose didn't go over and look at the painting. I just walked out.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So I've seen it from a distance,
yep.
But I was so overcome by people's reaction to it, which was basically not to look at it.
To that
I found
point.
That just fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just, hey, I'm just one person.
No, and to that point, Dad, there is a artwork called Comedian, which is showing at the Triennial at the NGV right now. I'm sure lots of you have actually heard of this. It's a banana gaff taped to a wall. It's by a artist called Maurizio Catalan, and it's called Comedian. You enter a room. You've been through like 9 rooms of avant-garde art, and it's all very well made. It's all very dense stuff. You walk into this room, and there is a white wall, completely white room, and there is a banana taped to a wall. And every once in a while, they'll change the banana. I can send you a picture of it, Dad. It's a strip of silver gaff tape and a banana, and the banana slowly rots, but it's just there. Now, the artwork isn't actually the banana. The artwork is standing back, to your point, and watching what people do. And what they do is they stand in front of it taking photos. And that's the artwork, is watching people's hysteria taking photos with a thing that they've seen online. So it's not making fun of those people. It's not an indictment of art and culture. It's just a social experiment. It's not judgy. Because the fact is, actually, it's exploring an interesting phenomenon. It's a piece of performance art, installation art, whatever. And it's a really interesting commentary on things like the Mona Lisa. And also, I was going to say, if you told me stories about Roger Rogerson, for example, right? If you had told me stories about Roger Rogerson from back in the day, during this show, and hadn't told me it was Roger Rogerson, and then just said it was some cop, don't get me wrong, it'd be an incredible story. But it wouldn't be as iconic as it is. But when you top load it and say Roger Rogerson, Dad, there is a reason that I think 3 of our top 10 rated episodes of all time are the ones with Roger Rogerson in the name. Hmm. It's because people want to, they like the top loading, the explanation, the ramping in, the hyping that you do, the things that you say up front, the name recognition, right? Mona Lisa, banana, Roger Rogerson, whatever. That's what gets people in. It's the quality of the content that makes them stay. The Mona Lisa, you don't need to sit there staring at it, right? There are pieces of artwork at the Louvre which are so fucking phenomenal. And they're also very famous. They're like, you know, a couple of tiers down. The Winged Victory of Samothrace is this incredible statue on one of the main stairwells. You can sit there staring at it for hours. It never gets old. And I think what I'm discovering is I like a little bit of hype. And I think that you and I are both people that hype things up. And I used to think that was a negative trait. I used to kind of sit there going, I wish we could just tell the story and let it speak for itself. But after this episode, after this conversation, I'm becoming increasingly... I now believe that the way you do things is really good. I think it gets people really psyched up. There's a reason you have a warm-up guide at gigs. There's a reason when you go and see a live taping of a show, there's a stand-up there sort of getting the audience to practice clapping. There's a reason you get people buzzed before the story, because sometimes the motor's not running. Sometimes you need to get warmed up. And what you do so well before you tell harrowing true crime stories is get people warmed up. You're like, hey guys, just want you to know this is going to be fucking great and here's why. Get excited. Because sometimes the human brain needs a jump start. It needs a jostle, and you're very good at that.
Paul, coming back to minimalism.
Yeah.
Minimalism doesn't mean you have nothing. I wanted to just come back to this guy that I knew. He was suave and sophisticated. He was financially very, very comfortable. He was a man about town. He was, an analogy for me would have been Roger Moore in a early James Bond movie. And he lived in an apartment in the city. We got chatting about minimalism. This is more than 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And he had finessed the concept of minimalism to the point where he took all his kitchen doors off every cupboard. So he had no kitchen doors. He had a bed, a single bed, in the middle of the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
I find that fascinating. He had one cup.
Yeah.
And people can judge and go, that's mad. Well, no, I don't agree. I think to say something's mad is a very, it's a very, very subjective thing. But I'm not like that, but I'm fairly, you know, we don't have a lot of cutlery, for example. If we did entertain, we could only entertain four people, including us. If there were more, we'd have to ask them to either A, bring their own cutlery, or B, we'd go out and get some more.
Yeah.
But I think with a minimalist environment and mindset, you can still have a couple of beautiful things. And what happens in that minimalist environment with the odd, really good thing is it accentuates the beauty.
Oh, yeah, I see. So if you've got a beautiful thing in the middle of a room with not much around it, the eye is drawn to the
thing. Instead of this, when I had my picture hanging business, I was often asked to do what's called a salon wall. A salon wall, listeners, for those of you that may not have heard of that term, is where the paintings hang from the floor to the ceiling.
Okay.
The bottom of the lowest painting is on the ground.
Gotcha.
That's where it starts.
Yeah.
The brief, when you go into the place, is, John, we want that entire wall covered in art. It's a prick of a job,
right?
For many, many reasons, particularly when the client would say, and this is when I just basically go crazy and walk out, they'd say, can you please lay it down on the floor so that we get, so we see what your plan is? And I'd say, no, because it evolves organically. And of course, the more people you have involved in that, it then becomes an issue of, well, no one will ever be really happy, and you spend hours just moving it around like a Rubik's Cube and achieving nothing. That's the extreme. And I have been into houses where you can't see the floor for clothes, and just, and there, and it's a disease and a sickness where people can't actually get rid of anything. But then you can take things to the extreme. I am very passionate about things that I care about, and I live and breathe the world of antiques.
Yeah.
I do so much research. The problem that I come across with my research is that I develop and gain a lot of knowledge, and I kind of build up this hype internally, and sometimes I take a vase or something to one of the leading experts and they basically just deflate my ego, my everything, all my research. They just throw it out the door in a microsecond.
Yeah.
It's so, so hard to take. And I have to suck it up. I guess that's why I like the world of auctions, because the market decides the value of my items.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't really touched on what I was going to talk about, which will have to be next week.
Yeah, honestly, Dad, I think this has been a genuinely valuable discussion to have. Because I really just wanted to kind of explain why I like the way you tell stories. And also, frankly, I've been going to therapy for a few months now, and a lot of stuff's been coming up about myself. And it's really comforting to see that you and I have brains that function in much the same way, which might be why, even though one of us is a police officer, an ex-police officer rather, and one of us is an author, we do, and we have a generational divide, that we have so much in common on like a deep psychological level. And I'm finding this, the ongoing project of Loose Units has been such, and it continues to be such a valuable, valuable process for me. And I just wanted listeners to know that, you know, I think Dad and I, we might seem like real odd bods, but there's nothing wrong with helping you, I think, understand us a little more. So I hope I've done that a little bit.
I agree. And also father-son relationships are...
Oh, my God, yes. Yes, of course.
You know, there are just so many dysfunctional father-son relationships. And, of course, there are some many, many extraordinary father-son relationships.
Yeah.
And that's not to take away from, you know, all the different combinations, which in this day and age are sort of almost infinite. But relationships are important. Honesty is important. Feeling, one thing we always stressed, Christina and myself, listeners, and I really want to bring this, I want to absolutely give this an iron seal. You've just taken a big, hot, red piece of metal out of a forge or a foundry and you're just beating the shit out of it on an anvil. And that is that you have to have honesty and dialogue with your children. You have to say to your kids from a very early age, no matter what happens, you've got to come and tell us. And that's really important, to have this sort of open line of communication. And be man enough if your kids say to you, look, Dad or Mum, that's just not right. At least be able to sit down and, you know, discuss things and, you know, just create this two-way sort of environment and treat your kids, you know, with... look, parenting is complicated,
yeah.
Really. It's full on.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Theory is one thing. There have been lots of books written about bringing kids up, and then all of a sudden you've got this screaming kid and you lose your brain, you lose your mind, you become irrational. And yeah, it's a tough one, but yeah. But it's good too.
Look, I honestly think that we may have just done a free psychoanalysis session, but I hope also it's given all of you a little bit more insight into the brains of John Verhoeven and Paul Verhoeven. That's what Loose Ends is for. It's for going off topic. But getting back on topic, we are out of time now, but we're going to be back next week with our part two of our look at the late Roger Rogerson. Thank you so much for your feedback on the Facebook page. We will see you next week. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we will see you very, very soon for more Loose Units. Bye, everyone.
Cheerio.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.